Support for Looking Up comes from Cincinnati Museum Center, presenting Destination Moon, the Apollo 11 mission. You can see more than 20 objects flown aboard the historic Apollo 11 mission, plus the Command Module Columbia, the only portion of the historic spacecraft to survive the lunar journey. Open now at Cincinnati Museum Center.
Hey, Dean.
Yes?
Did you know that there's a new roller coaster at Kings Island?
Yes, I'm super excited. What's it called?
Orion.
Yes.
It's going to be opening in a few months or next year or something. I don't really know. Are you excited about a space-themed roller coaster?
Most definitely. I mean, I'm glad they named it Orion after my favorite constellation.
Did they ask you about it?
They did not. What do you think? They did not. But it's, everything about it sounds terrifyingly fast, big, scary. I don't know. What do you think? You're going to go on it?
I'll wave to you as you... As you take
as
off
I pass
or whatever,
by at 93 that's like, miles an hour.
Hey, there's a blur. I think that was Dean.
That's right. I'm super excited, but I'm also scared too. So
it's a lot of emotions.
I'm glad they call it Orion. We'll take the constellation shout out.
Space is cool.
Oh yeah,
everyone knows that.
Yeah, whee! Hands up. Anyway, from the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory, where Dean is the astronomer and co-host of the PBS series Stargazers, and I need to know if the truth is really out there. In this episode, entrepreneur Kevin Bruns joins us to share stories about NASA experiments he's been a part of in the past. So you're excited for this roller coaster?
Oh, yeah.
It's supposed to be like a big one, like a giga coaster.
Yeah, I mean, there's the Beast at Kings Island. I love the Beast, like how fast that goes, and it's kind of shaky and like
it's on a wooden track.
Yeah, I like the wooden part about it, and so I don't mind like as long as it's not like sudden drops. I can't do the sudden drops.
Oh, you're not into that?
No, like the bungee things.
Isn't that what roller coasters kind of are?
Well, I like the slow, you know, like whee and then down and up and
yeah. Well, it's supposed to be like one of only 10 of these like special scary fast coasters in like the country or something crazy.
Yeah.
And you're like going to be first in line.
No, I'm not going to be first in line. I'm going to make sure it works first.
That's good.
I'll be, you know, make sure the first ride comes back intact. I think that's what I do.
But, that's nice.
But yeah, I'm not the biggest thrill seeker in the world. And
I'm surprised you're like so into it.
Yeah, I mean,
I did not see that coming.
Well, I mean, speaking of Kings Island, I mean, that was the place where I rode my first real roller coaster, and I was scared to death. Like, I was there on a 8th grade field trip. So we come down from Columbus as 8th graders, and I'm like just going around with everybody, and they're like, let's go on this roller coaster. I'm like, sure, whatever that is. I don't know what
roller coaster. You didn't know what a roller coaster was?
Well, I know what it'll
look
like.
So sheltered.
And that's the thing. Like, you know.
But you were like with your friends.
I didn't know what I was in for until I got on the platform. Like, I was so, you know, we're like 8th graders. We're all talking to each other and we don't care about anything. And so then I'm up on the platform. Then I'm like, then it dawns on me what I'm about to do. And I just like almost panicked. Like, only peer pressure put me on that ride.
It's not always bad.
Yeah. And that was it. After that, I was fine.
Oh,
how about you? Have you had any thrill-seeking experiences?
I'm not a roller coaster person. I get kind of sick. My mom made me ride one at Cedar Point, you know, like, and I I lost my glasses.
Oh.
I forgot about this. They had to, like, go in the grass and, like, get my glasses.
They let you find them?
No, I didn't. They found them for me. I was like, I lost my glasses. Yeah. They fell off. Like, it was a thing. God, what was this roller coaster? It wasn't the biggest roller coaster, but it, like, there was like a corkscrew part.
Yeah, yeah.
They fell right off, and I was like, someone needs to find those glasses. I cannot see anything. I couldn't have found them anyway. So that shows you, not only was I wearing glasses, but I was scared of roller coasters. And I was glad afterwards. I felt like kind of like I'm like all tough, but they make me absolutely sick to my stomach. I'm not a thrill seeker in that way.
Yeah.
A thrill for me is like finding something that I want to buy on like clearance. I get real excited.
Wow, that's about a 2 on a scale of excitement.
You had to be peer pressured by a bunch of 13-year-olds to go on a roller.
That's true.
As opposed to my 40-year-old mom at the time. That's fine, whatever. So no, I'm not hugely like Have you had any other like thrill seeking, well, like?
I was thinking as an adult. So I went to space camp for adults. I think I mentioned before.
We've talked about it.
Which is exactly as nerdy as it sounds. But in your downtime, they have like little rides there at the Huntsville.
For adults?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, for everybody. at least all the, I was taller than most of the people there, but still.
Oh, my God.
One of the rides is like, it shoots you straight up. Like, so you sit in those seats and like you have,
oh, yeah,
instead
like
of falling
like
down,
yeah,
you go up.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, well, it's not very high. I mean, I've been to Kings Island. I can handle this.
Oh God.
I'm from Ohio. We got roller coasters everywhere. But like, then I'm sitting there watching the people like go straight up fast.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a new experience for me. And so I had that whole flashback to eighth grade on that platform. And I was like, I don't think I can do this. I don't think I can do this. But then the actual eighth graders that were behind me,
oh my gosh.
Go ahead, old man. Get up on the thing. Go up there. Are you going to go or not?
You had to. It was a different kind of peer pressure.
It was. So,
gosh.
But I survived that one.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Not a thrill seeker.
Yeah. But I mean, with all this, we're going to be talking to Kevin Bruns today about his experiences with NASA and how they, you know, these tests that they do on civilians to like test out, you know, things for astronauts. And it just makes me think about, you know, NASA prepares for everything. It's like the most prepared, like they simulate everything over and over and over again and test out everything that they equipment. Like, have you ever had like experiences in your life where you had to like, you prepped for, it's not, you know, like as momentous as a space mission,
going
to space, where you're like prepared for every eventuality and everything.
And then things just do what they want?
Yes.
I would say, I mean, this is like kind of the answer you're looking for, but I would say like my wedding.
Yeah.
And I'd probably like say motherhood actually is definitely one of those things where you're like, I can do this. This is fine. And then you're like, nope.
Nope. No amount of preparation.
You can plan. And then like, what's that phrase? Like, man plans and like life laughs or whatever. It's like, oh, that's funny. You're going to try to plan. But I don't have anything like, I'm not NASA level.
No NASA level.
But
still,
you know.
Yeah, motherhood. That's a lifetime mission right there.
That's true. A lifetime mission.
It's one way.
That's one way to think about it. That's true. Yeah. No, but you definitely, you can try to plan. I can be NASA like and try to make a plan. Do you have an example besides going to trying to ride the thing at space camp?
I guess probably the eclipse, the big solar eclipse we had.
You played for this like 18 years.
Yeah. So
you took the day off.
Slightly obsessive.
Yeah.
But so I was preparing for that for a long time. And so I knew the exact second it was going to start, what it's going to look like, what to expect.
You had a Corona ready.
I had a Corona beer ready afterwards. Right. It was all set. And I just remember the people in the field with me were just like saying, like, you're going to let us know when it starts, right? And I'm like, part of me is like, don't bother me. I'm in the zone. I'm like,
I've waited 18 years.
I've waited 18 years for this.
Stop and, talking.
If I talk to you, it'll only say, get out of my way.
Oh my God, you're blocking my view.
You're blocking my view of the sun. No, so I was like, okay, I better say something encouraging. So I said, I'll let you know when it starts. Well, so I had this whole speech prepared. Like, I was like, okay, so what am I going to say? I'd be like, and now the moon is covered over the sun. Behold, you know, something like that.
Right, and your voice is going to get like that.
Yeah, instead, when it happened, I was like, look, it started! Look! That's all I could say.
A dignified speech becomes like, hurry up!
A very undignified. So I could use some NASA like simulations for that one. But,
yeah. Really, your whole career is like that, though. You like plan to do one thing, and then all of a sudden, getting like waxing philosophical.
That's right. Like, I know.
It's crazy.
Let it go. We'll just let it happen.
Yeah, just let it happen. The eclipse was fine. You got to see it.
Yeah, they
calm
got to
down.
See it too. I told them when it started.
Look. That's a bummer. We couldn't have been together, so you could have just like shrieked at me to like look up, basically.
Yep. Next one.
Next
2024.
That's right.
We'll be in there together.
There you go.
So I've been really looking forward to today's guest. We're going to be talking with Kevin Bruns. He is a entrepreneur in many fields of, he's had some pretty cool ideas for projects and for things. Mm-hmm. And a number of years ago, he came by the observatory with an interesting tale of science experiments at NASA that he was a part of. And we are so excited to have Kevin in the studio here with us today to tell us about his adventures. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So the story now, see, I'm trying to remember the exact story of how you spun this tale, but that for a number of weeks, you were a, is guinea pig the correct word?
Yeah, I'll go with guinea pig. That's perfectly safe.
So you had an experimental project you did with NASA. Tell us about that and how it happened.
Okay, how it happened was also a kind of an interesting, I guess, thing. I was doing a project. I had gotten myself involved through sort of a backdoor involvement with DARPA, which is a part of the DOD. They do a they're sort of a group of mad scientists as well that work with the Department of Defense. There was an event that they were holding. It was the original DARPA Grand Challenge that you might remember. It was a autonomous robotic vehicle race. It was the very first one, and the challenge was to get these vehicles autonomously. Now, we're going back 11, 12 years ago to first run through a qualifying course at the California Motor Speedway and then race across the desert. And they had several events after that, but it was an interesting thing. And it was a sort of a pioneering, it was the first time that these types of technologies had ever been really seen or tested. And I had somehow gotten myself involved in that. And there was one of my, I guess I wouldn't say a colleague, but one of the fellows that I was there working with. And I had just was talking to him and said, you know, I've always, you know, we were talking about NASA, because there's a lot of NASA presence there. And I said, you know, I would do anything to work for NASA. You know, I would push a broom, you know, to, you know, at NASA would be fantastic.
Don't say that, man. They got ears everywhere.
they really do.
Man.
You can't escape them. And they, well, he said, you know, he worked in the defense industry, and he said, you know, there's maybe something, it's a long shot, but you might give it a try. And he kind of pointed me in this direction at Johnson Space Center and said, you know, go to this link and see what you think. And I did. I started, I found my way to where he had described, and I started filling out an application, which was very, very lengthy. And one thing led to the next, and I received a phone call from Houston, and they said, we're interested in, you know, what you have. Which, can you come to Houston, come to JSC, and for some preliminary testing? And the answer was yes.
Yeah.
But that's all the information they gave you? They were just like, just come down here, and we're just going to do some preliminary I mean, you didn't know exactly.
Well, I had a
sense. Sorry, I'm jumping off script, but I was just like.
Well, I knew that this was part of the testing core.
Okay.
And I knew that I had done some reading. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they have the astronaut corps, of course, based out mm-hmm. of Johnson Space Center. And the astronaut corps has a testing corps. And this was during the Constellation program. And so what we were doing then, it was the return to the moon and then mission to Mars. That was mm-hmm. what was happening then. And they, you know, doing this work, they were anticipating actually going back to the moon to Mars. And there was all this equipment that needs to be tested and needs to be fitted. And so they need people that fit within what they called the astronaut profile. And if you can do that, then you would be qualified. And it was also, you know, were you available time-wise? Because some of these studies that some people got involved in would go on for 6 months. Yeah. Like you were in a simulation for six solid months, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Wow.
Some of them, you know, I wasn't, they never even asked me to do that. I think they probably figured that out.
Man.
Yeah. And so you have, so I started to go. I started to fly back and forth from Houston. And they said, well, let's pick a date and we'll fly you down. And you begin this series of testing and evaluation that I didn't know that they had tests as thorough, very thorough.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting to that initial phase, particularly the whole thing was interesting.
Yeah.
It never really lost its novelty, but it was a fascinating process from the beginning to the end.
So as much as you can share, you know, what did they do to you?
There's been that's a good question.
Are you allowed to even say?
I'm sure I can.
A dart to the neck.
There was a lot of confidentiality stuff that you had to sign. You had to have security clearance. I mean, that was one of the first things you needed to do. I mean, they test you, they tested your, they physically test you. They give you a physical, a very thorough physical. And they test your vision. They test your hearing. They give you IQ tests, mm-hmm. a variety of them. They give you personality profile tests. Mm-hmm. You know, they look into, they do background checks, of course. They have to go through all this preliminary stuff before you actually start to, when you get tested, they measure your, not just your hands, they measure your digits. They measure the length
like
of
the
each
joints?
Knuckle, of each toe, of each finger. I mean, because they're going to build things for you.
Oh, okay.
Because they're going to build things, you know, for the people that are going to use this.
Right.
So that was that was the first part, mm-hmm. you know.
And you passed.
I was going to say, did you feel so good?
Doesn't that make you feel good?
I mean, yeah.
It made me feel good that I even got the call.
Yeah, but to be down there. Oh,
yeah, because to be there is really, it's a very special environment.
Oh, bad, yeah.
You can really feel that you get the sense that you're in the midst of something special.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
so
really cool.
It is cool. And then, so I went home and waited. And of course, during this whole time, you're always being called in to take urine screens and mm-hmm. substance tests and stuff like this. They want to know what you're up to. Understandably so. And so, like, I was traveling quite a bit at the time. And I thought, well, you know, I don't know if they're going to call me or not. But, you know, at one point I was in the middle of Omaha. And I said, well, listen, I'm in the middle of Omaha. I don't know if I can go and take a test. Well, where are you in Omaha? Well, I'm out in the middle of the – what's the next town you're approaching? I get the name. Okay, we have a place you can go and submit a test. And, of course, to me that was – wow, you really can't.
What if they'd been like, so you're in Omaha, right near the Target on. Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you be like, they knew exactly
go
where
to this
you,
quest at this address.
I know you're 6 minutes away from it.
Like, they're like, oh, we see you.
Yeah,
we know
where you are.
The guy in the car, in the black car.
There's a satellite following your every movement. I'm just kidding.
No, not at all.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
And then you wait to see how it, you know, if it progresses. I mean, they'll call you and say, it's not going to work, you know, or they just continue to call me back. And I think I went three times before a worth of testing.
Wow.
Yeah, three trips, which is also just a real, it's just quite an experience. Like when you get there, when you get to the airport in Houston, you go to this area and a van, it's a white nondescript van with tinted windows and U.S. government plates swoops up and just picks you up. You climb into this thing and they whisk you away to Johnson Space Center.
Oh my God.
And you're thinking, it never gets old. And they have.
They literally just like look up in the van. You just.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dean didn't tell me anything. Like, unless, I don't know if he knew this, but I'm just like, this is fascinating to me and it's so interesting.
Yeah. Yep. It was really strange. Okay. So what else do they do to you? They do a lot of things.
I was trying to remember your story. So your main test. Describe your at least
because you pass everything.
The test that I remember that you know the experiment you did was they were trying you on microgravity or simulated gravity.
Well, yes, that was the analog. That's what we did. Well, what I was a part of was durational sort of lunar analogs. They were simulating lunar gravity, and you can't. There's no place here on Earth that you have less gravity. Well, not you know.
Right.
You can't just take away gravity or create gravity unless you talk to Bob Lazar. Apparently,
right.
that's
right.
different. But you can't do that. So what they do is they and what you're talking about simulating is the bodily fluids. We're made of mm-hmm. fluids, and these fluids are pooling in our bodies even as we sit here.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is one of the things that your body reacts to is when you change. If you go into lunar gravity or microgravity or anything like that, actually the fluids in your body are going to pool in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to understand how that's going to work and how that affects our performance in space or off of this planet. And they have a lot of analogs to look at that. So the way we would do it, for me, is I was in this contraption. This is after you go through everything.
Uh-huh.
You know,
this was your reward.
This is like, guess what you get to do? Oh my gosh.
They kind of sit you back. They have a measurement, a certain angle that your whole body is going to be sitting back in.
Okay.
And then in this table, it's not a table, but it's not a chair. It's this contraption. It's mm-hmm. pulleys and wheels. and your head never comes, like, you can't raise your head up, you know, to bring your chin down to look around, because that's going to affect, you know, you're going to corrupt the data, and everything is about the preservation of data.
Right.
And that's a very important thing, and it can be a little challenging at times to function 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in this thing, having to do all the things that a person has to do. And then they keep you quite busy, but that's kind of how they will affect, you know, a gravity, you know, and it's how they simulate how gravity would, and they know at certain angles how you're going to be, so they can control your gravity to the fluid in your body.
And 24/7.
24/7.
And you were cameras in the apparatus for how long?
I was in there for 10 days, you know, for that. Yeah. Woo. Yeah. And it was interesting because there's eyes on you.
Yeah.
You know, 24/7. I mean, when you're in one of these simulations, these analogs, like, they're very expensive, and there's a lot of people around you all the time. And in my case, like, they had shoes made for me. And you know, when you see this Dr. Scholl's little stands, and you put your feet down and it shows you your foot forces. Yeah. Well, that was something that was developed by NASA. And I think it came out of our program, because I never, at the time, it was brand new. Yeah. So they built these shoes for me. They were like $30,000.
Whoa.
Oh, and they looked like they were like 1980s New Balance, just real plain, but they had wires coming out of them.
Did you get to keep the shoes?
You know what? I took the shoes with me.
Yes.
Because I figured, who's going to wear these?
Well, who's going to wear these? They're made for you.
These are my $30,000 shoes.
That's right.
And, well, that didn't go over very well. So I got a call, and I was, of course, given a protocol to follow immediately. Did you take them out of the bag? No, ma'am, I didn't take them out of the bag. Okay, here's what we want you to do. We want you to take the bag, we want you to fold it a certain way, and you're going to go ahead and don't let any air in, and back, you know, ship it to us, ship it to this address, use this tracking number, whatever. Oh, okay, I got it. So
I'm though. They're made for you. Who's going to wear these shoes but you?
You know, these tests were pretty extensive. I you know, it's quite interesting. But they put you through, you know, but that's the analog, you know, the testing, I guess. That wasn't the only thing that they did there. I mean, they had a lot of people doing a lot of different things. They had the vertical treadmill in there, which you may have seen images of that. Okay, so part of this whole, to do anything at NASA, theoretically, there's supposed to be a civilian upside to everything that they do to justify the budget. There has to be a way that we, the citizens, are going to benefit from this. And so exercise, you know, countermeasures and dietary countermeasures in space, because, as you know, space makes you sick, you know, it makes you weaker. It's not good for us. Mm-hmm. So they have these dietary programs that you're on. So you're on very, very strict diets. I mean, when I say strict, I mean, you have to eat everything that they give you. There's no question that whatever they give you, you're going to eat all of it. You're going to drink.
Do they ask you what you like?
No.
I love that they'd be like, hey, what can we do for you?
No, they're
not
interested.
I'm off script. I'm sorry. I'm just this is interesting.
And that's part of it. Like, I think that, like, that part, that goes into the personality testing, maybe. Yeah. Like, you have to be a person that they know is going to eat. You're at NASA. You're at the Johnson Space Center. Yeah. You're in this environment. Like, you're going to do whatever you're thrilled to do whatever they ask you to do.
Right.
And so certainly food is the least of your concerns.
That's broccoli.
On this issue, I will tell you a little dietary hint that I try to share with people that I find when you're going through the testing process. Okay, so the doctors and the nurses are the same doctors and nurses that work on the astronaut corps. They have their own medical team.
Okay.
They're handpicked from the Cleveland Clinic and various places. And I noticed that, like, the cardiologist that I was working with and his team of nurses and a number of people, they were all eating the same snacks, which is raw broccoli, and they're all drinking black tea. Everybody. All the time. They're constant. This is what they snack on. Raw broccoli, and they drink black tea.
And black tea.
Yeah. I'm drinking black tea now. I still drink black tea every day. You know, that's what they drank all day. And I'm thinking, well, these people know something. I don't know what they know, but I'm going to follow their lead, at least dietarily, you know.
My gosh.
So,
wow.
It's quite interesting.
This is the most interesting interview.
See, this is what I've
this is hilarious.
This is why we had to track Kevin down.
I know. I'm so glad we did. That's really interesting.
I know.
I did not think this was going to be the level of detail we would get. I love it so much.
Lots of detail.
This is really interesting.
I can tell you another interesting thing that they did. I'll tell you the scariest thing that was.
Oh my God, tell me right now.
Okay. The scariest part was after my second or third visit to JSC, mm-hmm. they said, okay, well, you've passed everything, you've done everything, but there's one more test that you have to take. We're going to fly you here, and just for this specific test. And if I recall correctly, it was called the Bruce Protocol Stress Test. And I said, well, okay, that's fine.
What, you say Bruce?
Bruce. Yes.
Oh, Bruce.
I guess it's okay. Someone's name.
Oh, okay. Oh, I was thinking like Bruce. Yeah, everyone like, beat you up. Sorry, go ahead.
And I said, well, what's going to happen? And they said, well, we're going to put you on a treadmill, and we're going to take you to failure, and we're going to see how you do. And I'm thinking, failure?
Failure
like,
what?
Yeah. That makes me think you're just going to like run until you just like pass out.
Yeah. And so she's like, well, it's okay. You're going to have to be, you're going to be a room full of cardiologists and stuff, and we're going to put you on these things, and you're going to... And I thought, okay, well, let's just give it a shot. Mm-hmm. And I still wasn't quite sure what they meant by failure.
Yeah.
Are we talking about cardiac failure? Because we're in a cardiology. This is where this came from. And they give you clothes all the time, but that's another story. So I get on this, I fly there, and they get on this treadmill, and you got leads all over you.
Okay.
And you're breathing, they have like a regulator mm-hmm. where you're breathing, and it's got some kind of gases that you're breathing. And I had trained for this. I've been training hard. I mean, people are applying for 10,000 people a month at the time were applying for doing this.
Oh my gosh.
And so there's a bit of a, I guess, an unspoken, or maybe for some people, it's outward competition. You're gunning to do this. And so I just resigned myself. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to give it my all. And if I have a heart attack, I'm surrounded by a bunch of these NASA cardiologists. What a better place to do. They've got defibrillators everywhere. So... got on the machine, and they just take you up. They increase the pitch. You're eating, you're breathing the gas. There's steam coming out of the gas. You don't really know what's happening. It's very uncomfortable. You're in a, you got the doctors, you got lots of nurses, and you just go, and you keep pushing until, I didn't fail as it happened. So
you beat the machine?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I didn't. I don't know what... When she said that we're going to take you to failure, I don't know what that means, but I think maybe that meant that they're going to peak your heart rate. I mean, I was frightened. I had never ran that hard. I thought I was going to be sick. I had never pushed that hard before running. And then it came back down. And then they're drawing blood again. You're always drawing blood. You're always, you know, testing you. And I go back to my hotel. They take you. Back to they send you back to the Marriott, which is kind of right around it. Actually, I caught a ride from this doctor who's like, I got left there, and they were like, well, do you need a ride? I was like, yeah. I'm like, okay, go with Dr. Schlegel. Dr. Schlegel's like the main guy.
He's
like
really?
A serious like astronaut.
Oh my gosh, doctor. What's his car like?
Got back there, and I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm just gonna wait and see what happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And then you get a call from the woman, Wanda is her name, Nurse Wanda. She's sort of the gatekeeper. I think that she's sort of the gatekeeper, not just for us, for the testing corps, but for the astronaut corps as well. I mean, you go through this woman, she's like she's a naval medical officer who worked there. And you didn't really mess with Wanda much. You just did what you complied with best. And then I got the call. I said, and it was all, you're waiting on your numbers. How are your numbers? And she said, you know, your numbers are beautiful. And I knew, I was like,
oh my gosh.
I'm in.
And that was the last one?
That was the last test before I knew that I was going to get picked up for a simulation. And then I went and did this when I was telling you about it.
Yeah.
It was really a fantastic, you know, because you're surrounded with the best of the best, you know, in terms of equipment, certainly in terms of people. People really work their butts off there. Mm-hmm. The engineering, and they did a good job of making it. It was almost womb-like. Wow. It's the only way it is. It was very. You really felt extremely well taken care of, provided for.
You safe. You were there for like 10 straight days.
Well, that was just, that was in supported. There. No, they get you prepared.
But when you're like getting okay, that makes
and
sense.
Then when you get out, you don't safe. Just get out. It's not like you're done and leave. Like you can't. Okay, like you know the videos when the guys come out of the capsules and they can't walk. You know.
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't walk either. I mean, that goes away.
Wow.
It's a strange feeling when your legs just don't work anymore, you know, it takes some time. And of course, you're asking, well, you know, how long does the other guy take to get his legs back, you know? And
right. You got to beat him.
It's competitive of you. Yeah, it's like.
But, you know, I was walking in 3 or 4 hours, I guess, after. I mean, with some help. And then you just, you know, and at that point, that's when they want to kind of make sure. And of course, drawing blood, always making sure you're good. Bone density, you know, that's another thing that they're always looking for. That's what the exercises are for. The exercise countermeasures are primarily for space deteriorates your bone density. Mm-hmm. And that's a big problem. And so the exercises that you like the vertical treadmill and other types of treadmills and different exercise protocols to help sort of increase pressure on the bones so that your body doesn't stop contributing to the bones. So you don't break them, I guess, when you get back on the ground. Hmm. It's a fascinating program. It really, really was. And then it was canceled. I was lined up for a, I was hoping, I was gunning for another program, which is actually in Glenn. Glenn Research Center did a couple of different things. Mm-hmm. And but then the cancellation, the program, the Constellation program was canceled in 2009 or 10. And then that was the end of that. And that was the end of my... you know, my experience and my time at NASA, at least up until now. Man, you know, well, maybe in the future, we'll see.
Such a great story. We really appreciate you coming and telling us about this.
Thanks, guys.
Because I remember you telling me about this, and I was just like...
I remember you looking at me like, what?
This is the greatest thing I've ever heard. I know. It's so funny.
There's so much behind
I didn't
us.
Know it was a thing. And then I was like, really? And
if you think about
it. I love it.
Yeah. They're not just going to send those guys up into space, right. The cream of the crop, and hope that the gear works.
Yeah.
They're going to test it on us, yep. You know, and see if it's good. And we give feedback and say, well, this isn't working. This is rubbing. This is chafing.
Right.
You know, you've got these things that you're wearing on your legs and on your feet, and you have to tell them, you know, and... It was a really interesting and...
like an unsung hero of the space program.
You know...
Too much?
That might be a bit of a
I'm
stretch, but I appreciate it. I'll take it. It was a good time.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Guys. I had fun, too.
All right. So we know separating fact from fiction... I almost said friction. Mm-hmm. Fiction... When it comes to outer space, the universe can it's really an endless watch. You have to always be, you know, trying to figure things out. And we're going to play a little game. I find things on social media or that people, you know, whatever, that people pass off as fact. And I want to know from Dean if it's fact or fiction. Are you ready?
Ready to go.
You better be ready. Mm-hmm. There's some good ones. Okay. For some reason, there's been a lot of things. Okay. Are you ready?
Yep.
I already said you said you were ready. Good, great. Okay, so on August 3rd in Cincinnati, supposedly, according to a British tabloid, there were UFO lights, unexplainable lights. Did that really happen?
Yes, that is fact. There were unexplainable lights in the sky above a Cincinnati neighborhood near downtown.
You heard it here first.
That lots of people saw and witnessed, photographed, videoed, all sorts of things. There were four lights in a row. They were like lined up in this perfect line.
Creepy.
And it looked like they were floating. And then there was a fifth one. And then the lights went out. And then they went back on.
Oh,
and then
gosh.
They went out. And so what was it? Drones.
That seems like the government got to you.
Yes, the government got to me.
And they were like, you better say drones, Regis.
That's right. The white van is out there ready for to pick me up. But drones is the most likely explanation. You put some LED lights on drones and have a little fun with the people.
Oh, you think people were messing with people?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was definitely human.
This is not the most convincing answer you've ever given to this kind of... I mean, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, but check out the videos. They're online.
They are online.
Look up Cincinnati Lights in the Sky, August 3rd.
I don't think we should link to it, though. We have to be a respectable podcast.
Yeah, let them find it themselves.
Let them find it.
Yep.
Just Google UFO lights incident. Okay.
But it was a good hoax. I applaud I applaud the hoaxsters on that one. But earthly stuff.
Okay. All right. So then the other day, this is actually not social media. I heard that a trivia question on a radio show, the volume of the moon is the same as the volume of the Pacific Ocean. Go. Fact, fiction, other.
Oh, boy, that's a common one that's out there. The Pacific Ocean is big.
Yeah.
It is, you know, covers
voluminous.
Quite a bit of the surface area of the Earth. And however, it is fiction.
They said it was fact.
Not
radio.
Even close radio hosts. They were way off because the ocean's not very deep in a lot of places. There's some places where it's a couple miles deep, but it's not like,
scary.
You know, the moon that's 2,160 miles in diameter and it's moon all the way down. So there's a lot of volume of the moon and it's a The moon out volumes the Pacific Ocean 35-1. So it's
not even close.
Sorry.
Oh, man, they got to tell those radio hosts.
Yep.
Also, very scientific social media link to an article in a women's magazine. I won't say which one. Mm-hmm. That the moon phase affects your moods.
Yeah, that one came to my feed also. And it was like, moon phase will tell you how you're going to be feeling this month. And, you know, when there's a crescent moon, you feel like this. When there's a full moon, you feel like this. When there's a new moon, you have a low energy. And I was like, yeah, that's nice. But then to help their cause, they put pictures of the incorrect moon phases next to each one.
No.
Yes,
did you email them? Please tell me that you
did. I should have, but I didn't want to even dignify their mood theory with a response.
With any kind of like...
Yeah. So, I mean, the only thing it does for people, I think, is like if you see a moon up in the sky, to me, it brightens my day. I like that. But like, you know, you hardly ever notice the moon up in the sky. It's up in the daytime a lot of times. You don't notice it.
And it's true.
So it's there's a lot of studies about the moon and how it relates to you, but mood, not so much a good link. So
unless you want to be told how to feel.
Unless you want to be told how to feel, then you're like, oh, it's a new moon today.
Like,
oh.
Hey, I'm low energy. I can't finish that project, boss. It's a new moon, buddy.
It's a good excuse.
It's a really good, I'm going to try it. I mean, what? No, I would never.
Won't work on me.
You're not my boss.
Oh, yeah. Good. It'll work on.
Snap.
It'll work on him.
That's right. Who knows?
All right. Don't listen. Let's make sure he doesn't listen
yeah,
to this.
Yeah, we got
to
make sure.
I'll use it, too.
Steal his headphones.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks so much to Kevin Bruns for joining us today. You can find out more about Kevin at our website, wvxu.org/lookingup.
And thank you for listening. We'd love to get your ideas for guests or topics or any questions you or your kids may have about space, astronomy, and science. You can drop us a note on Facebook or Twitter or email us at lookingup@wvxu.org.
The archives of all past episodes of Looking Up are easy to find. Check out interviews with William Shatner, astronaut Scott Kelly, former NASA head Charlie Bolden, and many more at wvxu.org/lookingup.
You can subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts, and please give us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. It really helps, and we'd really appreciate it.
Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y question mark, from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.